This is another episode of Better, Worse, or the Same. Today on the show, I have Jim Peterman. This is Dr. Jim Peterman. He is a data scientist at Adaptation and a co-founder of FuelFood.io. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to chatting.
Sure. Yeah. So first of all, what exactly is Adaptation? Before we go on, I just want to know what that is.
Yeah. Adaptation is a kind of a holistic approach to healthcare, primarily focusing on individuals with what we call specialty diseases.
Okay.
So these are folks who have, say, IBD or Crohn's disease, diseases that are kind of complicated and hard to treat.
Okay.
We source medications to make it more affordable and then also provide a greater quality of care with access to health coaches and clinicians, as well as providing some lifestyle medicine coaching
to help
people improve their health.
So I wanted to bring you on the show to talk a little bit about obesity. I know that your PhD is in exercise science. And right now, kind of the big hot topic in meds right now are these GLP-1 agonists. These are the Ozempic, Mounjaro, I think is another one coming out. These are the meds that people are wanting to take that essentially eliminate a pretty high percentage of their body fat or their BMI over a course of a couple weeks. And I know that your background isn't so much in the pharmaceutical aspect of weight loss, but more in the diet and exercise concept of weight loss. And from your perspective, I mean, what's driving this, the whole weight epidemic from, you know, from a data scientist perspective?
I guess from a data scientist, but also just a physiology or exercise science person, there's just a lot of different things driving the obesity epidemic. Changes in physical activity levels, changes in nutrition, sleep could be contributing in as well. There's social aspects as well. It's a complicated beast to try and tackle.
Sure. Yeah. Now, I know I kind of threw you a pretty tough question straight off the bat, but it's so interesting when you look at obesity in the 1970s, 1980s, and then all of a sudden obesity blew up in the last 20, 30 years. So I guess a better way to say it is what do you think has happened in the last 20, 30 years that has helped fuel this epidemic?
There's just a lot of conflicting information.
Sure.
So I think there's some thoughts that physical activity has decreased quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And it just depends on how you measure physical activity. So like the number of people who are exercising or meeting activity guidelines has not really changed that much. But some of the research that came out, especially when I was getting my PhD, really emphasized that our lifestyle levels of physical activity, so just, I don't know, walking around the house, cleaning, that kind of thing, that type of physical activity has decreased quite a bit. And even though that doesn't make up a significant number of, let's say, calories, it still has led to quite a bit of weight gain.
Over the course of 5 years, 10 years, something like that, this adds up.
Exactly.
So talking about that a little bit, do we maybe have the wrong idea of what constitutes physical activity? I know that I've had some patients who they don't count a workout unless they're actually at the gym and their heart rate is elevated. And then I've had other patients who say, oh, I do a 15-minute walk. Do you have any idea of like who has the right approach in that context?
I think viewpoints are changing. Mm-hmm. So I think in the past, we have typically thought physical activity meant going out and, let's say, running for 30 minutes. Now we're realizing that you don't have to run for 30 minutes to get health benefits with physical activity. Even just walking the dog around the block is associated with health benefits, and just really trying to get people to
just move.
To move at all.
Mm-hmm.
is kind of the goal.
Now, I know you did send me an interesting article that I wanted to talk about a little bit, and it was comparing different diets. And it was looking at the best diet for obesity, and it came up with kind of a better, the best idea. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So I think diet, you know, we talked about physical activity contributing to maybe the obesity epidemic. Diet has certainly contributed as well. There's a lot more processed foods that are being eaten. And so this study compared different dietary recommendations to see, I guess, which one, we'll say, performed the quote-unquote best. And what they found was really that it's more about decreasing some of these processed foods, and it's less important in terms of exactly what diet you follow. Just eating real foods is, I think, kind of their main message.
So do you think that it's possible to say that with diet and exercise, that we're focusing too much on this, these kind of minutiae of, did you get exactly 30 minutes of an elevated heart rate, or did you get all of your micros and macronutrients in? And instead, we should be looking at it kind of a simpler view of, hey, did you walk today, and did you eat something that wasn't super chemical?
There's so much individual variability. So some people may really like a highly detailed instruction on how to improve their health. Others maybe just need some more general guidelines. Otherwise, they'll get lost in trying to meet, you know, like you said, 30 minutes of, I don't know, a heart rate at 130. You know, they may get confused about what to do if their heart rate gets up to 132.
Sure.
You know, and so I think some general guidelines can really help. But in some cases, specifics.
Sure. And you talked a little bit about it with your group, adaptation and fuel food. And I want to talk about fuel food in a little bit. But you mentioned lifestyle medicine. So lifestyle medicine, it's kind of similar in the same vein of functional medicine. Kind of looking at the system, or am I incorrect about that? Is it separate from functional medicine?
I would say it's somewhat similar to functional medicine. It's just really focusing on whole body health.
Sure.
So for some of these medications, some medications out there, maybe it just, it's like the Ozempic, maybe it just impacts weight, but we want to look at all aspects of whole body health. So physical activity can be beneficial across the board, help with stress, body weight, glucose levels. It's looking at medicine in a slightly different way. The other key thing with lifestyle medicine is that it really promotes prevention instead of just treatment. So preventing disease as opposed to waiting for it to get bad and then treating it.
Sure, sure. Now, this might be a heavy one for you, but what I think is so interesting about our current medical system, and I don't think that a lot of medical providers really want to admit this, but it seems to me, and I'm wondering your take on it, being with your background, it seems to me that our current medical system is fundamentally not designed to address prevention of illness and address some of these lifestyle factors that contribute to increased morbidity and mortality. What do you think about that?
Yeah, the medical industry is designed to address problems as they arise and focus less on prevention. I also think, to a certain degree, the fault is on our own.
How so?
Because it's easier to realize you have bad lifestyle habits, let's say, once you get an injury. So let's say if you're, to use a recent example I heard of, let's say you're moving pavers.
Sure.
You're moving pavers and you sore out your back.
Yes. Yes, that is true. I do have a back brace on right now. I should have had better social connection, and my neighbor should have helped me. He did offer. That's the worst part. Yeah. No, that's true.
But also maybe some physical activity, you know, maybe some strength training before would have helped.
Sure.
Prevent the injury. So but you didn't necessarily realize that the lifestyle behaviors were bad until you had the injury.
Sure.
Now you have to treat it. So it's not just the medical industry. It's kind of also just human nature and how we think.
Yeah. And I like what you said about that, because it's true. You need buy-in from the I hate to call them a patient, because, you know, patient implies that you're already sick, but you need buy-in from the individual. Right, where the individual says, hey, I want to avoid surgery as much as possible. I want to avoid illness as much as possible. And if you don't have a motivated individual, it's going to be very hard to sell them diet and exercise to prevent problems before they occur.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. And it's also, it's hard to motivate someone for something they don't understand, let's say.
Sure.
Let me try and think of an example. If you don't know what it's like for it to be painful to walk to the mailbox,
sure.
It's hard to be motivated to do something to prevent that.
I think that that's very true. So here's the question then. How does a group like Adaptation or Fuel Food, how do these companies that promote this approach, how do you help facilitate the proper relationship with individuals so that you can achieve these health outcomes?
Yeah, so it's to a certain extent two different populations. Adaptation is more focused on, like I said, these individuals who have specialty diseases.
Sure.
So unfortunately,
they're already sick.
They already are patients.
Yep.
And we are in kind of a treatment phase. Certainly, there's prevention to prevent additional comorbidities, additional disease. But a lot of organizations, so like the, I'm trying to think of, like, I think it's the Rheumatoid Arthritis Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
They still recommend a lot of these lifestyle behaviors as part of a treatment plan.
Okay.
And so we facilitate that by having these patients work with health coaches and clinicians, providing more care as they're able to interact with these individuals more. Obviously, you'll be able to get the clinician is able to understand how the patient reacts to certain medications, or maybe you recommend an increase in physical activity, but maybe they can't do, let's say, 40 minutes a day, but they could do 20 or something. You know, it's a matter of working with the patient to really personalize their care to help them improve their condition. So Fuel Food was originally designed for athletes. I have an athlete I work with, Logan, who is actually the founder of Fuel Food. He started working with me. I was a cycling coach, or I still am a cycling coach. I was providing him with training plans, but then he was struggling with actually doing the training because his nutrition was so bad. So he started this app to help him identify recipes that he could cook, and that would then allow him to meet his nutrition needs during training. He recruited me based on my kind of physiology and exercise science background, as well as my data science background. And we've really kind of taken off with it. So now we're opening it up and targeting other populations as well, because nutrition is not a problem that only athletes struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem that everyone struggles with. And so we're creating this a nutrition solution that essentially predicts your energy needs and allows you to personalize your nutrition. So you can select what type of diet you would like to follow, whether that's vegan, vegetarian, or let's say you want to follow like the Mediterranean diet. We have all of these options in there. Then there's also personalization. So, you know, one of the tough things with diet recommendations is basically recommending ingredients. But what if you don't like one of those ingredients? So we allow you to eliminate those from your diet if you don't like it. Because if you're not enjoying what you're eating, you're not going to stick with the meal plan. An app basically delivers recipes for as many meals as you want per day. And then you can also order all the ingredients you need from the store through the app, have them delivered to really kind of make the whole nutrition process as easy as possible.
Sure. And I guess the thing that I wanted to kind of segue into was this body positive movement and this focus on BMI, but we had talked a little bit before about the role of exercise outside of just weight loss. Because I think a lot of people look at exercise and say, if I'm not losing weight, then I'm not getting any benefit. And you had some really good points about that.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people focus on body weight as thinking that is the definition of health, and it really isn't. You could have two people of a similar body weight, similar BMI, similar body fat percentage. But if one is exercising more, they're likely going to have better health outcomes in terms of less disease risk, less, if we think of the end all be all, less risk for early mortality.
Sure. And can you talk about like what diseases are we looking at that they would probably have lower incidence of?
Man, it's almost, I think physical activity is associated with almost every disease out there.
Sure.
So a lot of different cancers. I think I've seen research about Alzheimer's, diabetes, hypertension. There's all kinds of different types of disease that are
associated with physical activity.
Yeah, the risk is lower when you're actually exercising.
Now, I remember a couple different articles that came out recently talking about COVID, and physical activity was a huge predictor of how well you did with the infection. And it seemed that people who were physically active kind of had this extra protective layer on them versus people who weren't. Regardless, you know, I mean, there's still other risk factors, of course, age and whatever it may be, but it seemed that there was an independent risk factor of physical activity.
Exactly. Yeah. I think I seem to remember commercials that would discuss risk factors for severe COVID, and physical activity was one of them. If you weren't being very physically active,
sure,
you had a greater risk.
Now, so going back to that a little bit, say you have someone who's physically active, and I don't know if you would be able to answer this right off the top of your head, but what would be the issue if I come to you and I say, look, I'm physically active, but I'm not losing weight? You know, with your background and your kind of education in health promoting behaviors and physiology, what would you tell them?
Yeah, I think this is where it becomes, you need to look at the whole system, understand the lifestyle behaviors of this individual more completely. So, you know, there's research that shows if you're not getting enough sleep, exercise or even dieting is not going to help you lose weight, because the sleep loss negates all of that. So you want to understand sleep. You'd also want to look at just how much physical activity the person is performing.
Mm-hmm.
The tough thing with physical activity is, we talked about this a little bit before, to a certain extent, there's two types of physical activity. There's kind of the planned exercise, that 30-minute run, and then there's the rest of the physical activity you perform the rest of the day. That's the cleaning up the house, cutting the lawn, whatever it may be. And so what can happen with exercise is that maybe you go run for, let's say you go run for an hour, because it's a Saturday, it's beautiful out, and you really want to push it. You run for an hour, but then the rest of the day, you end up just sitting on the couch watching basketball. Now, overall, your energy expenditure may not have actually increased compared to the other days when you only ran 30 minutes. And so it's a balance that you kind of have to look at across the board. And of course, that's the physical activity side. And then of course, there's the diet side, and it's hard to separate the two. I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand how many calories they burn when they exercise, which is understandable. There's a lot of individual variability there, and people don't like math. and so a lot of people will exercise and then do a reward.
They're just optimistic. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I burned more than I thought I did.
Right. Exactly. I've earned the ability to eat this large pizza in one sitting, and you will overcompensate a lot of the times with those calories. And
sure.
So that obviously then becomes problematic.
Sure. But so you'll still have a high BMI because you're missing this larger picture, but you're even despite the high BMI, you're still going to get the cardiovascular benefits, the neuroprotective benefits. You're going to get a lot of these other benefits that'll decrease other diseases, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And just improve, in general, improve overall well-being. Maybe I didn't mention also just general stress reduction and that type of thing.
Yeah, you just have a big gas tank.
Yeah.
For more energy. Well, I like that approach. I actually think that approach of lifestyle medicine is hopefully going to start taking off a little bit more. And it seems like your two companies, Adaption, how do you spell it again one more time?
It's Adaptation.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. Adaptation spelled Adyptation.
Ptation?
Yeah.
I'm not in marketing, but I'm just going to tell you, you got to do a simpler name. Like, yeah, Nike or something like
it's
that.
It's not a name for
a podcast.
It's not a name for podcast.
Sure. Yeah, so A-D-Y-A-P-T-I-O-N.
I'll do it one more time. A-D-Y-P-T-A-T-I-O-N.
Perfect. Adaptation.com?
Yeah.
Perfect. And then the other one?
It's fuelfood.io.
Perfect. And anybody listening, if they want to jump on these, they can do that, right? Do they need any access codes or anything like that?
Fuel Food, anyone can hop on to. Adaptation, we're kind of more marketing towards other businesses.
Sure.
But certainly check it out, and the company that listeners are working for, maybe they'd be interested in signing up.
Perfect. All right. Well, Jim, thank you so much for being on the show. I like to have you back sometime.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'd be happy to join again.
All right. You take care.
All right. You too.
Bye.